優しい瞳だけ。
Hello, you're listening to a Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is a discussional podcast episode. We talk about the news that seems important to us, that should be important to you because it's important to us, and then dive into our community and talk to some fantastic community members that have left us comments through email, contact us button on otakuspirit.com, or on our Discord. We have a questions channel in there where you can submit questions. Or if you're bad community members, start talking in there because it's bad. I think it's going to be like an ongoing joke because this whole idea of people talking in there and they're not supposed to, but they'll do it just because we're making fun of it. Don't do that because then Ira's going to get mad. I don't want Ira not to get the joke and then get mad at you guys. But anyways, yes, it's been a fun last couple weeks. Last week we did pretty much a mailbag episode, which got us mostly caught up, so that's great. But we still got more coming in. We want more coming in, so it's a lot of fun communicating with you guys and hearing your feedback. And yes, your first animes, which has been kind of weird. You guys are weird people who have had weird starter anime that shouldn't be allowed in the anime sphere, but
you do it anyways. I'm weird too, so I guess I'm part of that club.
That was
you're not weird.
That was the funny thing, because we were talking about how these people have, like, really weird and, like, sometimes raunchy starter anime, and it's like, well, yeah, technically we started with things like Tenchi Muyo, which is, you know, has lots of and inappropriate stuff in it. We just, at the time, we just thought it was edgy. Now it's just, holy crap, that's weird to start out with that. But it's a lot of fun. I think the new starter anime concept has been a lot of fun. I need to go back and remember who started that, because then they can get credit for it whenever we talk about it. So, but yeah, as always, we're always interested in those weird, fun new concepts for us to talk about. So, but yeah, last couple weeks has been pretty crazy. This week has been mostly crazy because we're moving stuff and getting new floors put in, and it's just been exhausting, and it kind of messed with a lot of things that I had scheduled, but I think for the most part, we kept things going, except for the podcast. The podcast got delayed a couple days, so I wanted to get one up just for you guys that are podcast-only listeners. We want to keep supporting you guys because you guys are definitely a huge part of our community and everything, so especially like our trucker otaku, you out there, shout out. Keep safe on the roads. We have quite a few trucker podcast listeners. So, I mean, what do you do when you're driving for hours a day than to have, you know, us geeks talking in your ear? So, definitely love the support. But anywho, with that all said, we should jump into our news, because we have a few exciting things to actually talk about this week that I'm kind of...
One that we found out just a few minutes ago.
Which one?
Miku.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Yeah, Miku. Hatsune Miku Project Diva Megamix apparently went to PC, and I had zero clue that was happening. It's so great when we try to act like we're, like, big fans of something, and then something comes up, and it's like, wait, when was this announced? Apparently it was announced because they just released it. But why Megamix? Why Megamix of all the versions? Why Megamix?
They're probably planning on double-dipping and putting Future Tone on there in a few minutes.
They always do that. That's technically PS4 has Future Tone and it has Diva X. It's like, yeah, I guess. And then at least with the PS3, it was like different versions. It was like Diva F and then Diva F second. It was like iterations. This is like completely different versions thrown on the Switch. Megamix, for those who don't know, is the Switch version of Hatsumiku, which is fine, but they only have like 170 songs. Future Tone, which was on PS4, which I would have loved to have gone over the PC, that one has like, what, almost 300 songs on it? And plus the art style is different with Megamix. They go for like a cel-shaded look to make it work on the Switch, whereas the Future Tone is the arcade version, which is like super, you know, detailed shaders and all that kind of stuff on the characters. I mean, two different art styles, so you might like one or the other, but I don't know. It's like I might just do that just because I hate dealing with splitting the HDMI and going through a capture card and everything. Being able to just fire up Hatsumiku would be really convenient, so I might...
More than likely, they got money out of me.
Just
finding out, it was already a done deal. They probably got the money from me.
There's a side of me that just loves supporting Hatsumiku in general.
Yep.
So that's why I buy like I bought the 3DS version. And I barely played it, just because I want to support it. Got the Switch version. I played the Switch version quite a bit. It's really nice when you're on the go. But I don't go on the go a lot anymore. I don't travel as much as I used to with my old job. So, yeah, I don't know. Well, I'll probably get it. We'll just try it out. Maybe tonight. We do have a stream, so depending on when this is posted. Thursdays, we have Hatsumiku streams. So, might just play it then, just to dink around in it and see how it plays. Because, I mean, I'm sure it'll play really nicely. So, and since I don't have to worry about my old capture card, I'll be able to capture 60 frames per second. So, you guys can see us, the what do you call it? Twitch reactions that we have to have. Twitch.tv/otakuspirited, by the way, ED at the end.
Might be nice to just start over from the beginning again.
We never finished the other one because there's like 280 songs. Oh, and we always get caught up on the other song. I think there might actually be some in there that weren't in the other ones, so that might be a good thing too.
It might be fun to just challenge ourselves to clear everything. Literally clear everything. That's what I was trying to do on the last week, was clear all the...
We've been trying that for a long time. I think that's only something we successfully did with, like, Project Diva F. But,
Because the normals and easiers are just so painful anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they're sometimes cases harder because you're overthinking about it and stuff. So, and sometimes the notes move slower. But yeah, we'll check that out. I think it's like $40 for the base package and then like $59 for the full
$39.39, Andrew.
Yes, $39.39. That is the Miku thing. Anyways, yes, that news. Our next bit of news. We finally got a trailer for Urusei Yatsura. So, yeah, Urusei Yatsura it's happening. And now we have proof because they actually animated something. Now, it could be just vapor. Like, they just created this trailer just to make us think that it's animated. But apparently, it is happening. So, check out that trailer. It's some major nostalgia coming out of that thing. And I'm super excited for this to come back. Of course, this is... The kind of interesting things that came from this trailer is that Hiroshi Kamiya is going to be playing Ataru Moroboshi, which is the main character. That's exciting because I think, for those who don't know, that is the voice of Araragi. And yeah, when I'm listening to the trailer, I'm like, yeah, that's Araragi, and it's going to be perfect for him to play that role. But yes, also Lum is going to be played as Sumire Uesaka. So that's exciting as well. So... got some really talented people kind of playing as the main roles. So they also announced... Sorry.
I was just going to say, I was actually thinking of the voice actor of the main guy in...
not Kirito. Grimgar. No Kirito. No. Ronta. Yes.
No, not Ronta. The other guy, the one that did the scene.
Yes, the scene. Gotcha.
I thought I was thinking his voice would work well with him. So, but Araragi will be interesting to see. I love the art style. I mean, it gives off the old style, plus it's merged with more the newer style. So I really love it, the how that all plays out, because that's what I've been complaining about for a while. I want to see the older style anime kind of mixed with the newer stuff.
That was an exciting thing that we got with Ushio and Tor. And the thing that brought to my mind when I watched this trailer was
Ushio.
That was the voice you're talking about.
Yeah.
The thing that I got from Ushio and Tor was bringing that old style to a modern day, but just giving it that polish to not look old. That's definitely what they're kind of doing with this particular series. So I'm excited for it. I'm not like a huge fan of certain aspects from older styles, but for the most part, they really did pull this off. And so, again, that kind of amplifies that desire to watch this ASAP. Also, they announced that Maya Uchida will be playing Shinobu Miyake. So that's great. Thankfully, here recently, we found out even though she was diagnosed, she has recovered. So she'll be able to play that role. So, and Mamoru Miyano will be playing Shutaro Mendo. So, like I said, really great cast to support this. They, of course, revealed in the trailer and also in a new key art they released is that the anime will be coming in October. So I think we were kind of speculating that was the case. So at least we got a confirmation. So fall. And yes, for any that have forgotten already, this is supposed to be running for an entire year. So October to October, we'll be getting nothing but crazy shenanigans of this series. So that's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Definitely excited for it. And for those that are not aware, for those new fans, which there's plenty out there, this, is, of course, is an adaptation of the manga series by Rumiko Takahashi. Of course, a manga that was way back in the 70s, late 70s when it started, and was adapted as an anime in the 80s. But now, again, we're going to be getting a new adaptation. So great stuff. Really cool stuff. Again, for those that are not aware, this is a series about a boy who meets a beautiful alien, space alien, and the concept here is that he is kind of told that he has to play tag with this alien princess, and if he doesn't do it, the aliens are going to invade Earth and all that kind of stuff. So he has 10 days to touch Lum's horns, or aliens will take over the Earth. As it turns out, the game of tag is only the beginning of Ataro's troubles as he continues to attract strange encounters with otherworldly beings. So, a lot of fun. Definitely look forward to that. So, cool deal. Moving on, we have Crunchyroll has announced that they have plans to release Suzume no Tojimari, or the loose translation is Suzume's Door Locking. This is, of course, the next film in Mikoto Shinkai's work, so all those fans of his works, this is the next one's coming up over here. The idea behind this is they're going to be working with Sony Pictures Entertainment and Wild Bunch International to get it in theaters pretty much everywhere. So they're working on a worldwide release of the film. Of course, Koto Shinkai kind of, you know, created a big stir with Your Name. So obviously they're probably taking this into account in getting as much coverage of the world as possible so they can get that same success that Your Name had. But yeah,
two things that are guaranteed with this: it'll probably look freaking gorgeous, and it's probably going to be very, very bittersweet.
Yeah, Comics Wave is really good at making some extremely beautiful stuff, so that is no doubt. But they're aimed at early 2023, so still a little ways away.
And probably touch on something kind of weird.
Yeah. It says the story is on the other side of the door was time in its entirety. 17-year-old Suzume's journey begins in a quiet town of Kyushu when she encounters a young man who tells her, "I'm looking for a door." What Suzume finds is a single weathered door standing upright in the midst of ruins as though it was shielded from whatever catastrophe struck. Seemingly mesmerized by its power, Suzume reaches for the knob. Doors begin to open one after another across Japan, unleashing a destruction upon any who enter. Suzume must close these portals to prevent further disaster. The stars, the sunset, the morning sky. Within that realm, it was as though time had melded together in the sky. Drawn in by a mysterious door, Suzume's journey is about to begin. That was the most obscure, and I guess I got an idea of what it's talking about. Artsy fartsy synopsis. Thank you, Comics Wave Films, for that description. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be fantastic. And yeah, like Chris said, it's probably going to look gorgeous. So I haven't actually looked into any of the trailers or anything on this. So I'll be going into it pretty darn blind. So Yeah. It hasn't released yet in Japan, which is kind of surprising. So they kind of announced this grabbing really early. It's supposed to be in Japan on November 11th. So if you're in Japan, you could probably check it out early. Also, they will be penning a novel for the series as well, or the movie as well, which is going to be shipping in August. So double dip in there. Cool stuff. Cool stuff. Hopefully, eventually, Crunchyroll could pull off actually getting it to more theaters than normal, but we'll see. If not, hopefully they'll stream it. Hopefully. Chris, I got some exciting news for you. We're getting a new Tan Girl Best Girl Maid show, and I'm sure you'll be excited for it. Square Enix has announced that the maid I hired recently is mysterious, or as I like to call it, my name is unusual.
I think you said that recently, my mage is unusual. I'm kind of concerned about that. Is there restroom needs in this?
No.
PV?
No, it's just the title sounds very much so like recently my mate is unusual.
See, I automatically think of drool things with the mysterious button.
does the style remind you of anything? I don't know if I already
obviously
pretty much spoiled this.
Not Takagi, but the other one.
You're talking about like the Nagatoro?
Nagatoro, yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's the vibes I'm getting from
that's
her.
That's fine.
You asked my what I'm reminded of.
But no, the art style and everything, it's, and obviously Tangirl. But no, it pretty much has the same, this is from the mangaka of Jahi-sama Will Not Be Defeated. We also have pretty much the same team is going to be animating it. So pretty much like Jahi-sama, but now made. And I don't know what it's going for here. If it's going to go for a concept of her being, you know, some secret spy or something like that, but I'm gathering from the PV that it's more pushing towards an idea of him just being attracted to her, and that's why she seems mysterious or something. Like, oh boy, Boku, she's, something's different about her. Boku, Doki Doki, I don't know, but we'll see. But she looks definitely very, very good. Just very good.
I mean, I can see the Jahi-sama, but yeah. I don't know. I mean,
I'm curious if it'll be a teasing girl kind of thing, similar to like, you know, Bok-chan, the Duke of Death, or something like that. So it'll be interesting. It looks really good though. I definitely, if anything, I can give this mangaka and the character designers for the anime, they really do pull off the eyes. Just the eyes just glow, and they have a certain sharpness to them that I really do like. So kill the animators with those details in the eyes. That's all we're looking for.
Yeah, eyes are massive for me, so.
Yeah. It says the original manga created by the creator of Jahi. I hired a maid who has something about her I just can't put my finger on. She sure looks great and a fabulous cook, but something about her's not quite right. What have I gotten myself in? Or maybe she's an alien. She could be an alien. Or demon.
I'm going with demon.
Yeah, could be. We'll see, though. Looks great, though.
Tenshi.
Chris, I have some exciting news for you. Adult Swim has announced they have greenlit two new anime series. The first one, Rick and Morty, the anime. I know you're a big Rick and Morty fan, so you can probably tell me more about this. I'm kind of out of the mix, but joking. Takashi Sano of Tower of God will be directing it. It's going to be running for 10 episodes, and Telecon Animation Film is the studio, and this will be an original work that will be adapting themes and events from the main series. So, again, if you're a huge Rick and Morty fan, I have completely missed that boat, something I've never really gotten into, like most anything else Western anime or animation-wise after, I don't know, the 90s. But I do know that there's a lot of fans out there, so I'm definitely excited for people to check that out. I might dabble in it just to kind of check it out.
That's generally my direction is I know that it's very, very well loved, and so I will, now that it's an anime, I'll probably poke in to see if it's worth my time. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty skipped on my side unless it catches my attention.
Yeah, my experience with it so far has just basically been I turned it on once and the doctor guy kept burping and then I turned it off. I was like, okay, this is getting really annoying. So I just turned it off. But yeah, obviously it's good because there's a lot of people that are fans of it, even older folks. So the other show that they talked about was Ninja Kamui, which I think we'd heard about this one before, but like I said, it's greenlit. Sungo Park of Jujutsu Kaisen will be directing it. ENH Production and Soul Entertainment will be producing it. And this one's about a ninja who basically quits being a ninja and they come and kill his family. And so he's on a revenge to go and take them out. So check that out if that's interesting to you. Has a pretty cool art for the key art. So I'm sure it'll be pretty awesome. Both will be premiering on Adult Swim and HBO Max. So that was interesting. Interesting take there. So cool stuff. If you want to watch them, I'm guessing we're probably going to have to stream them on HBO. I don't know that Crunchyroll or anybody will get them. I know that Crunchyroll has worked with Adult Swim in the past with things like Fina Pirate Princess and stuff. So hopefully there'll be a bit of a spread of availability there than normal. So we'll see. Moving on, the official website and Twitter opened for the TV anime adaptation of Malevolent Spirits Monogatari manga. This is a series that we talked about a little bit on our podcast about pretty much Tsugumogamis and this guy that really hates them and that he has to now live with somebody that it treats them like family. So cool to see that we got some more stuff released for it. Additionally, along with the original announcement for the adaptation. We also got the studio BN Pictures will be animating it, as well as, like I said, a PV for, you know, getting to see what it's kind of look like. It looks all right. It looks like a lot of it's getting very artsy with its style, but I think that'll probably play in very well with the concept of what it's going for. So yeah, good to see that's continuing on, but excited for that one. I don't know if you were excited for it or not.
I'm struggling to remember what we talked about with it, but I like the concept of the Tsugumogamis. So yeah.
I think it's one of those ones where we've got quite a few shows for the it seemed like we got like a plethora of them at some point, and then they kind of went away. But it's kind of in the same vein as like yokai and stuff like that, spirits that kind of consume objects. And again, we've had like that one that was about how they were using it to basically help people. Like they would give people Tsugumogamis and as objects, and they would take them home and then they would investigate, and then they would come back and tell them what's going on in the home, and they would be able to help the people, stuff like that. And yeah, Tsugumomo technically is one but more in the ecchi vein. But like I said, this one's kind of going more for something happened in his past, and he claims that they robbed him of something, like Tsugumogami robbed him of something in his past, so now he doesn't really like him. And again, his grandfather or somebody wanting to kind of help him not going on the path of darkness kind of hooks him up with this person that, again, lives with them and really does like them. So we'll see how that one turns out, but that's exciting. It's exciting. Moving on, we have Crunchyroll has announced that they have licensed Chainsaw Man for simulcast for later this year. This has been announced through an email that was sent to me, kind of announcing that they will be working on getting it across 200 countries and territories across the world. They're going to be doing a sub and a dub of the series, so that's exciting for pretty much everybody that's been super fanatic about this getting an adaptation. Of course, it's being done by Studio MAPPA, so it looks... The trailer that they released, 2 years ago looked really incredible. So definitely exciting news for Chainsaw fans. I kind of had a desire to check out the manga because of how much hype was kind of being built around it. So, and any video I release on it seems to be doing well. So it seems like there's a lot of excitement around Chainsaw Man. So
yeah, curious about the grenade head lady. So
there's a grenade head lady?
Yes.
I did not know that there was a grenade head lady. So. I don't know. I've been pretty like. Besides
she's the one
PV,
that's got the thing on her neck that she the pin.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh yeah,
interesting. Does her head explode?
I guess I don't know.
I know I get like serious vibes of like what was that? No Guns Life. It's like what is Japan's fascination with with lethal weapons being heads? Like, what is that thing? It's just like their obsession with motorcycles. It's like Chris was playing Final Fantasy 13 on stream lately, and it's like, yeah, I remember how it was like out of nowhere, suddenly we're using a motorcycle that's Shiva put in one, and he's running over people, and it's like, you're so weird, Japan. I don't know.
Why do they gotta anthropomorphize everything? Right. I mean, I don't mind, but at the same time, I mean, why?
It just looks cheesy sometimes. It's just sometimes if it doesn't land, it just looks so cheesy, but we'll see. The synopsis, for those that are not aware, Denji is a teenage boy living with a chainsaw devil named Pochita. Due to his debt his father left behind, he has been living a rock-bottom life while repaying his debt by harvesting devil corpses with Pochita. One day, Denji is betrayed and killed, spoiler. As his consciousness fades, he makes a contract with Pochita and gets revived as Chainsaw Man, a man with a devil's heart. So, there you go. We'll be harvesting more devil corpses as the Chainsaw Man. So, yeah, I know a lot of people are, like, super excited for the... I don't know if she's the grenade head girl, but, like, there's some Jaws teeth girl that, like, everybody's super hyped about. I think back when we were talking about modding and My Dress Up Darling, everybody was like, yeah, you just wait until Chainsaw Man comes out. Everybody claimed that she's going to be girl of the year. Just wait until Chainsaw Man. So I'm going to curb my expectations because I'm sure I'm probably getting it overhyped, but we'll see if that turns out to be true. But like I said, the PV looks insane. But again, MAPPA loves releasing insane trailers, and they've been doing insane stuff lately, so I'm sure it'll turn out to be fantastic, just based on the animation alone, if anything. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
That's her.
No, that's not the girl I'm thinking Rize. Of. There you go. The one I'm thinking of is she. I think she has red hair, but yeah, we'll see. Yeah, that's weird. Reminds me of the Knights of Sidonia guy, but yeah. Anyhow, the official website for Fire Force Anime has announced that the manga will be getting a third season. So I know this was like teased and leaked and talked about for quite a while, and then suddenly we got a actual confirmation on it. So, but yeah, pretty cool. Excited for that. I'll probably get, before that comes out, I'll probably get caught up on the series. I think I was like halfway through the second season, so it's not much for me to get caught up on it. I don't know why. I think I wasn't liking the current arc they were getting into, and I got kind of bored, and so I dropped away from it and never got back to it. And it kind of was one of those ones where it falls in a mid-season where we're working with reviews and first impressions of the next season, and sometimes those multi-cores get kind of lost. So I'll probably get back on that one. But it's exciting because I think this is kind of a good sign that the series will get a full adaptation, because the manga technically is already done, from what I understand. So yeah, the 34th final volume was released, I think, 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, that's cool. Are you going to get back on it? How far were you into it? Or did you finish the second season?
No, I got mostly halfway through, maybe a little bit farther. They were in a different area, and they were investigating a temple, let's just say.
Yeah. That I got past that part, because I think after that they had the whole part where the, I forget the names, but the main guy from the Asian looking area and the Joker guy, Kendra Suda, were going down inside the church.
Yeah,
and
I dropped off too. I guess I just thought the other,
because I know that they just returned back from the temple.
Yeah,
they just got back home and they were giving their report, and they started talking about the whole pie thing. The pie number thing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was getting to something very interesting that I kind of had my assumptions on what it would end up being, like what is powering everything. And that stuff was getting very interesting. So, and again, Kendra Suda. I don't know how I managed to drop a show that has Kendra Suda, but I did. And I need to get back on it.
I do too.
So,
I didn't. I wasn't hating it.
Yep. They also announced that it's going to get a video game, which I think ended up turning out to be a mobile game. So, big whoop there. I was kind of hoping it would be something similar to, you know, like the Narutos and stuff with the Demon Slayers, those battle or versus type games. But again, it ended up being a mobile game. So, woof. Which I guess I should have gotten by the fact that I think a lot of the early statements were saying that it was going to be a free-to-play game. So, that usually ends up being mobile game. But they did say that Miss Green Apple will be doing the song for the game, so that's cool. But yeah, super super excited for that. Again, I'll hopefully get caught up. They didn't announce a date for it or anything, so I'm going to predict winter or spring of next year, I think. I think that's where my prediction is going to lay. Probably spring, because spring's usually where crazy stuff starts happening. So we'll see. We'll see. Moving on, the official website for Rent a Girlfriend. Are you excited, Chris? More news about Rent a Girlfriend.
Yeah.
They have released a premiere date of July 1st. So right around the corner, we're going to be getting back into the fun of that train wreck. And then everybody can be reminded, apparently they forgot that the main character likes to self-cuck himself. I don't know. I still can't get over the fact that everybody was surprised by that in the manga here recently. It's like it was like that in the anime, so I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, that train wreck. Well, I'm just, there's just a side of me that's hoping, and I think that's the reason why I want to watch it. Well, I mean, I'm going to watch it because the girls are cute. I mean, they are good characters. I just hate the main character, like, with a burning passion. I think the main character is absolute garbage.
That's pretty much where I fall. And I try to ignore whenever he's on the screen, which is pretty much 99% of the show. But generally, I just really like the girls. And so yeah,
they're cute. And we need more of the shy girl, which was, like, the best girl. And she, like, shows up at, like, the last episode of the first season. So
Subaru is in this one, right?
There's a side Ozora. Of me.
Subaru?
Yeah.
She's like one of my favorite characters. Yeah, the Doki Doki
girl.
Yeah.
I really like the Doki Doki girl, too. I think the only character I was like very met on was the main poster girl. And I actually believe, and this is like a very rare thing for me. Honestly, for all the girls of this show, I just like, my mentality is, I don't have the mentality of I want this girl to win. And I want the main character to choose this girl. I want all the girls to just leave the main guy. Like, that's literally my mindset. But if I had to choose one to win, question mark, for the main character, it would be the poster girl. Because she's the enabler. She's the one that's enabling his patheticness. And so it's like, it's the rare case where I'm like, I don't mind if the main poster girl wins. Like, the girl from his school that is his first date that he paid for. I kind of hope that they will redeem what's her face, the girl that's played by Aoyuki, because she's voiced by Aoyuki. I kind of hope that they will redeem her. I don't think they'll ever will, though. Cause she's just super nasty, and that hurts because it's Aoyuki.
I when it comes down to it, I mean, we did kind of disagree on her. I don't think she's that bad. I think that really a lot of it is she's an enabler in a way as well. Yeah. And that in a weird way, they kind of deserve each other. I mean, he's just such garbage, and she's,
as long as Doki Doki Girl and Shy Girl just get out of the picture, we're happy much. For them to find somebody better. But Abusive Girl and Poster Girl, they're fine. I like that I'm using these weird names.
I kind of like her in this weird way, but when it comes down to it, yeah, they deserve each other. Really do.
They're both garbage in a way. Anyways, we'll see how that turns out. That it will be the usual train wreck. I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. So, yeah. Moving on to other things that have gotten TV animes. We got our next one, which is an episode? A website was opened for the manga Yuri Is My Job, and a manga getting an anime adaptation. Let me restate that.
Sold. This is top of the chart, best of the year, all over it.
Let me retry this. So a website was opened to announce that the manga Yuri Is My Job will be getting a TV anime adaptation. That was a much better statement of what is going on here. So sorry about that. But yes, they released a trailer for it. They released a key art for it. The thing that I got a kick out of was that they released two different key arts. So you have the first key art shows the two girls. You know, one looks very, very prince, looking down to the princess girl, and they're like, and she's kind of barely got her hands touching her cheeks. And the second one looks, she's all ticked off, and the other girl's scared. It's like the prince suddenly becomes angry, and then the princess is like, holy crap, what have I got myself into? And so my immediate thought was like, oh gosh, this is going to be one of those, like, there's the top, there's the bottom, and it's going to be abusive and stuff. And then I read the synopsis, and I'm like, actually, this sounds really cool. So the synopsis is the story, which centers around Hime, a high school girl who deeply cares about her image as a sweet, helpful princess, but on the inside only cares about herself. Against her will, Hime gets manipulated into working as a waitress at a place that's part cafe, part theater, where all the waitresses pretend to be students at a fictional German all-girls boarding school. Hime finds herself falling for another waitress at the cafe, who in front of customers gives Hime love and devotion like she's never known. So, again, the first key art. There's just one problem. Behind the scenes, Hime's crush hates her guts. So I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, the quote-unquote prince girl, the girl that's doting on her in front of everybody, like, probably hates her very princess, you know, sweet nature and thinks that she's just probably a liar. I don't know. It sounds funny. So we'll see. I'm very, very... I got that backwards. I'm very miss hit with when it comes to Yuri anime. So, like, Bloom Into You was like a very rare case where I'm like, I really like this Yuri story. Typically, I don't like Yuri shows because it's always, yeah, one person's forcing themselves on somebody else until they agree to it kind of thing. So, your thoughts?
Andrew hates top bottom more than me.
Yeah. It just feels so samey. Feels very samey, and it does kind of, it's not like it relies on a lot, but they do play a lot in Brick's characters with that kind of concept. So
that's true.
I don't know. I just don't like the whole idea of forcing.
I want to see it before.
Yeah, we'll see. But it looks decent though. The visuals and everything looks good. So we'll see how that turns out. I'm pretty excited for it. Some of the character designs are kind of shrug, but it looks decent. So we'll see. We'll see. Holy crap. Her character design does not match the key art at all. I thought that was a different character. I literally thought that was a different character. Look at this, Chris. So, like, right here, that's supposed to be her. Like,
right.
Like, in the anime version of it with the trailer, it looks a lot more, I don't know, saturated and flat. How weird. Usually the key arts are pretty close. That is nothing alike. I don't know, maybe the light novel artist drew the key art. How weird. How bizarrely different.
She's a total masochist. She's a bottom.
But
through and through.
Bottom and top discussion aside. Yui Ogura and Sume Uesaka will be reprising their roles for it. Apparently they did a manga promo for it a while back. Maybe that was what that trailer was. I don't know. How weird. How bizarre. Anyways, but yeah. That's cool. Be looking forward to that. Moving on. Speaking of the Duke of Death and his maid that we talked about earlier, we have the second season of the series has pretty much got a date set for it. Not really. But they have announced on Twitter that the series will be returning in 2023, so still got a ways to go. Let's go back to Andrew's prediction time. I'm going to say, I don't know. I haven't looked at JC staff and what they've currently got in the works, but I'm gonna throw out. When was the original first season? Was that a winter show? Wasn't it?
Seems like it.
I'm gonna say winter. I'm gonna go winter again. I think that's going to be a winter show. Again, this is technically JC staff's CGI crew, so it's not really technically... It's hard to really base their workload on that, but they technically do use probably similar staffers outside of the animators, so... We'll see. If you have not watched Duke of Death and His Maid, definitely a great show. Please go check it out. But I'm super excited for that, because they were definitely getting into some crazy stuff. Not really crazy stuff, but some pretty deep stuff with the backstory of the characters and how they were linked. And so I'm really curious to see how that ends up turning out and if we can get a conclusion on it, because, as I've stated before, technically with the other work that they did with that CGI team, they fully adapted it, and that was High Score Girl. So they might do the same with this series. So I would love that because I want to see them finally be able to touch, at least touch. I want to see them touch. They so love each other. They deserve each other. So, yeah. Super cool. Super cool. Moving on. Mob Psycho 100. Yes. If you have not heard this news bit, let me inform you. Yeah, they pretty much broke the internet here a couple weeks ago in releasing a trailer, which pretty much just has a bunch of clips from the first seasons, but they did, in that trailer, announce that the series was going to be returning, which is definitely exciting for a lot of people. October! Yes, right around the corner. So fall, Mob Psycho 100 Season 3 will be returning in October, so really cool. I've stated quite a bit that I didn't like the first season at all. I really didn't. I didn't get the hype. Everybody was super excited about it, and I did not get it. It was just wasn't for me. But the second season really did sell me on the series, so I am kind of excited for the return of the series. So, how are you on Mob Psycho? Did you ever?
No, I never finished the first season.
You didn't. I don't know. I seem to remember that I was trying to push you a little bit because I was enjoying the second season.
And I almost did, but it was one of those that just time got away with it. And I've always been kind of, about what's his name? One or Pan? Something like that is the guy who wrote his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
One.
I'm very, very iffy on his stuff. I mean, I generally started to like One Punch Man, but that was more because of the background characters. I didn't much care for the main character.
That's the same with this show. Like Mob, I don't really care much about. Like that I agree with you there. And I think we were on the same page when it came to the first season, honestly. And I think that was why I was pushing you when I got into the second season and I was enjoying it. It was like, oh, wow, Chris, I actually like this show now. And yeah, a lot of it has to do with, like, again, the side characters who technically really did kind of change my perspective on it. Like, I forget what his name is, but the guy that is technically his parental figure, the scam artist, like getting into him and just suddenly realizing I really like his character. Again, it never is me going, holy crap, Mob has seen so much development. I mean, he technically had a really solid point in the second season that I was like, holy crap, I really like what Mob they're doing with Mob right now. But overall, he's just Mob. He's just there. He's just existing. I mean,
it's one of those things. It's like people when we first talked about it, it was like, We got into how much we didn't much care for it, and everybody was like, "Well, you're missing the no. We get the jokes. I when it came to One Punch Man, it was like we get the jokes. We do more than most. We get the jokes. When it comes to Mob Psycho, I understand what it's trying to do, but when it comes down to it, while I do think that it's some of it, the characters are really well. I think that the writer's main strength is his character building outside of his main character. He doesn't mm-hmm. have a very solid ability to write the character itself because he tries too hard to make them really, really deadpan, or for a lack of a better term.
It makes me wonder if he purposely makes their main character very flat and very, yeah, like the same as they were the first episode, just to make the side characters more dynamic looking, I guess.
Yeah.
Like you can see the contrast between them. I don't know if that's purposely done.
That's one of the funny things about it is for a character that he seems to really want the main character of One Punch Man or the main character of Mob Psycho. I think Mob Psycho is Mob, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. Mob and Saitama.
Saitama, that's him. He really wants them to be great characters because you know that he loves those characters a lot, but he doesn't set them up well, and so they don't, and it gets so sidetracked in writing everything else around them that it takes too long for you to get to the point where you go, oh, I see, now I see what you're trying to do here. So hey, that's my opinion, don't kill me for it.
let me be perfectly clear. I do see that there is development in Mob. He's going from being very timid, very, you know, unable to speak to other people. He's got a lot of social issues. I do acknowledge that he is getting stronger. He's getting more, I guess, brave about how he interacts with people. And that is definitely a point of the series. So don't get me wrong. It's just the developments aren't as much as you would see in the side characters. And that's kind of where I would kind of put it. So, and I think the other problem that I always had is I've never liked One's artwork. I've never liked his artwork. And I think it's really great that there are a lot of the animators and stuff with his particular works, maybe minus One Punch Man season 2, really do manage to bring him to life and put a lot of really great animation in there. And that's, I think, been a lot of the draw for a lot of people for the series. And I fully acknowledge that too. Like I pointed out several times back when season 2 aired that there was one particular fight that was all one, it wasn't one cut, but it was all one battle, and it flowed so well into itself, and the choreography and the fight itself was so beautifully executed. So it does have me excited for season 3.
That's for sure. That more than anything, I will acknowledge his artwork really lends itself well to animation.
Yeah. I go. So now that we've lost half of our listeners, let's move on. Some pretty cool news around Polygon Pictures, if you're a fan of them like I am. But apparently Netflix have revealed that Polygon Pictures will be animating one of the upcoming segments of the third volume of Love, Death, and Robots animated series. So for those that aren't aware, Love, Death, and Robots is a kind of a series of short stories in a series form on Netflix. And I dabbled a little bit in it. I think our other brother kind of turned me on to it. He's like, yeah, there's these cool episodes. It's one of those ones where you kind of just say, hey, check out this episode, and this episode. They're the good ones. The rest of them you don't have to worry about. But they're like, they're their own segmented stories. And like I said, it's pretty cool to learn that Polygon Pictures is going to be doing a segment of it. Probably the most interesting synopsis given for it, that's for sure. The synopsis is, when an exploratory expedition on the surface of the moon ends in disaster, an astronaut must trek to safety, dragging the body of her co-pilot while using potentially mind-warping drugs to deal with the pain of her own injuries in this trippy tribute to comic book legend Mobius. So, sounds interesting. So, we'll see. But yeah, if you're a fan of Polygon Pictures, like I said, or if you just want to support an animated studio doing one of the segments for the series, definitely at least go check out that particular episode. So it is titled The Very Pulse of the Machine. So cool stuff. Moving on, The Angel Next Door Spoils Me Rotten anime is getting an anime at... I'm doing terrible with these titles of what's going on. The Angel Next Door Spoils Me Rotten manga is getting an anime adaptation. It's a light novel. oh my gosh, this is terrible. So there's a light novel. It's called The Angel Next Door Spoils Me Rotten. It's getting an anime. And they released a new teaser visual for it. This teaser visual announced that the series will be premiering sometime in 2023, and that Project Number 9 will be working on it. So that's definitely cool. She looks cute. The synopsis is, Amane lives alone in an apartment, and the most beautiful girl in school, Mahiro, lives next door to him. What a shock. They've almost never spoken until the day that he sees her distressed in a rainy day and lends her his umbrella. To return the favor, she offers to help him around the house, and a relationship slowly begins to blossom as the distance between them closes. So, yeah, cute girl suddenly realizes he's an amazing guy because he lent an umbrella to her and has devoted her entire life to spoiling him with food, because obviously that's what girls do. So if you're excited for that one, like I am, aside from my joking,
she's the perfect girlfriend.
Look forward to that.
There you go.
And maybe we already have our best waifu of 2023 already laid out. So just put a pin in it. We've already figured it out for next year. We'll see. Moving on, we have a follow-up to our previous news that we talked about, that Netflix was looking at possibly introducing ad support low costing tiers for their subscription service. Well, apparently, according to New York Times, they have reported that Netflix may add ad support by October or December of this year, so, or between October and December. So it looks like that whole idea, I mean, having obviously the CEO Hastings talking about it, it's just, this kind of gives a little bit of confirmation to that. And this was apparently leaked through a internal memo that was given to New York Times. But the interesting thing that I found from this, because again, we've already pretty much talked to death about this whole idea of having ad support. Again, we've talked about how it depends on how many ads you get, how less costing it is. But the interesting thing that came from this memo was additional thing that was kind of added in that memo, which is that they have plans to crack down on password sharing at the same time. So all you out there that are evil password sharers, they're going to crack down on you. So, yeah, what do you think of that, Chris?
Oh, last time I said anything about this, I got a little bit of heat for it. Apparently, I'm not allowed to say that Netflix doesn't know what their customers want.
How dare you, Chris? How dare you? People don't criticize Chris. He gets all uncomfortable about it.
No, when it comes down to it, I still stand by what I said. I don't. It's not that I don't think that they are very aware of the backlash. I don't think that they. How do I put this? Because apparently the way I said it was wrong.
Say things right, Chris.
I know, right? When it comes down to it, people have an expectation. And when a customer builds a relationship with a business, after a certain point, businesses get to a point where they're so large, they start to lose their ability to relate to the customer. Netflix got to that point where they're just too big and they're starting to just look at things via numbers. And they make gambles based on how many number, what will their numbers, number loss be compared to their number gain. They're making a bet based on, we have this many people that are sharing passwords, therefore this is how much we will gain versus how much they will lose.
Yep.
But their mindset is based on the idea of, this is what we will gain versus how much we will lose. They're not taking into consideration the psychology of the customer themselves. That psychology is, you are, you sold me on, and no, people are not thinking along this line, but this is basically the mindset of the customer. You sold me, this is what I could do. Therefore, it's better that I just cut off my support of you, because I can go on the high seas for all these stupid shows that you're giving me, and I can get them that way. Or you can keep my subscription. So Netflix is not looking at it in the mindset of the customer. They're looking at it from the perspective of the money or the numbers, this number versus this number. And that's the most simplest I can put it. I'm not trying to say Netflix is right. I'm not saying the customer is right, because in both cases, both of them are, it's like bickering siblings. Neither of them are wrong and neither of them are right. There's gray areas in all of this crap. I mean, Netflix is technically right in the fact that they want to make money. At the same time, the customer is right in the fact that they already are giving them a service this way. Changing that entire dynamic is technically wrong. So it's a catch-22 for Netflix. It's a catch-22 for the customer. They both want what they want, and neither of them are willing to bend on this, because Netflix can't keep losing this way, and the customer technically already is sold. They need to find a better way of resolving this issue, and cutting them off and saying, no, you're not going to have it, and, oh yeah, by the way, give you, you can still subscribe and pay for, and do ad support at the same time, I guess is a compromise, but I think it's a compromise that to me is, how do you put it? It's an unrealistic expectation, I guess the better is a viable way of putting it. It's unrealistic to think the customer, that's the best solution. It's not. The best solution is to encourage them wanting to do multiple accounts.
That's the struggle that it has, is there's... Yeah, it's twofold. And the joke that continues to be, for those that are not aware, Netflix used to actually encourage a password sharing. That was their whole shtick, was that, ha-ha, all these other services that don't want you to share, we are fine with it. And now they're really backtracking it. And it's one of those aspects of, they are trying to turn the blame from their own issues, which is that they don't have the content there that people want. And for anybody that is account sharing, it's because they don't feel that they themselves have enough on that platform to justify an account. The only reason that I think a lot of people do account share is because they just want to pop in to watch one thing. They don't. There's not enough content there for them to have a $20 a month subscription. And they don't understand, and again, this is one of those aspects of do they not understand, or do they just want to deflect attention from their own faults, which is that they are not producing the content on their platform that justifies $20 a month. There's so many other services out there that have plenty of content flooding into that. Crunchyroll has weekly 40-plus episodes of shows launching on their platform. You have Disney Plus, lots of content and movies, Disney movies that are launching on their platform on a regular basis. And they all don't cost $20 a month, all of them costing a fraction, a quarter sometimes, of the cost of a Netflix account. And if they can't justify you paying four times as much just to get on their platform, people are going to either share or they're going to not do it. And this mindset that if you suddenly lock off people from being able to account share, that suddenly that group of people are suddenly going to just sub up, you're going to have a rude awakening. It's not going to happen. Instead, focus on producing good content and focus on that.
It's one of those things that when you see the business start the death spiral, it doesn't matter what anybody can say. I mean, yeah, maybe they can figure it out and change the direction, but no matter what we say, I mean, nobody at Netflix is likely listening to us, so it's not like it really matters.
We had one person, but he doesn't work there anymore.
It's one of those things that when I mentioned this back with World of Warcraft, basically Blizzard. Once they start that death spiral, no matter what anybody says, they're going to continue that path because they think that they are in the right. And that's how the death spiral begins, is that I know what I have to do to fix this problem, and so therefore I'm going to go towards it. Darn the consequences, this is going to happen. And that's how the death spiral starts, and then you slowly watch them basically self-mutilate themselves until eventually they're just a husk of what they were. Netflix is on this path. They're at the very beginning of it, but they're on this path.
Yeah, again, we mentioned the idea that them losing 200,000 subscribers doesn't seem like much with their large base, but you have to keep it in consideration that that is a lot of money. Again, 20 times 200,000 is a lot of money, especially for a company that's expecting that. And again, you have shareholders that are probably not too happy about that drop. Yes, their stock price is dropping and everything.
Well, think of it this way. Like Andrew had said, when they probably showed that to their board, and the board says, well, how are we going to fix this? Well, we could make it to where we take away all of the password sharing. Okay, do that. They did that. Then the backlash happened. Okay, they had to go to the board. Well, how do we fix it? Well, we could try to do this. Okay, let's do that. And then they tried to do that. And like I said, this is all a numbers game. To them, they don't have the customer on the ground. they could probably do polls all day long, and people are like, yeah, I love Netflix. Netflix is great. So they believe that they are okay. But when it comes down to it, that's not, they're not happy. Customers are not happy. That should be reflecting, and they're not seeing it. Instead, they're seeing, how can we patch the holes? This is what I'm talking about with the death spiral. They're trying to fix a problem that they see of money being bled. And when money is bleeding, panic happens. And so they get more and more extreme on how they can fix it. That's the death spiral.
I think it's important to note, because obviously the question mark comes is, how are they going to handle the account sharing thing? Keep in mind here, recently, I think it was in Europe, they started doing a account sharing subscription tier. So if I can guess, probably what they're going to do in the West, because I think that was probably a test bed. I don't know how successful that was to them, but that's what we'll probably see over here, is they'll probably have like a, if you account share, you have to pay an extra $4 or $5 per month, and then other people can use your account. I don't know how successful that was for them, but yeah, I do think that there is a sign that they are either bleeding a lot or they're trying to correct their path. And the fact that they recently, about a week ago, announced that they have laid off 150 employees. Again, the immediate response to that is, oh my gosh, this is bad. They're losing 150 employees. They're starting to cut. They're trimming either, you know, possible in anticipation for them losing money. They want to prevent more loss of money. But they technically, apparently a portion of that is animators. So what is probably the least successful thing that Netflix has been doing? These animated shows that are just nobody likes. And I'm sure there's people that like them. But these animated, this is an anime. This is the more Western looking animated shows they've been doing. Like, what was that one? I don't remember the names of them. I just know they were garbage. But for me, they were garbage. But they are apparently removing a lot of those departments and eliminating a lot of those particular roles. So that could be a sign of a positive thing. They see that stuff is not successful, and so they're trimming that fat so they can focus on other things. But, or you can see it as them, again, just firing employees because they are losing so much money and they are trying to downsize to, you know, eliminate that impact of losing subscribers. But again, that's my whole mentality, is they just need to create content to justify that cost. But my opinion is more of, they just need to lower their subscription costs so that people would actually want to keep their sub. But anyways, that's your Netflix TED Talk for the week. Our regularly scheduled Netflix TED Talk. Moving on to fun things again. Shueisha has announced that Kubo Won't Let Me Be Invisible manga is getting a TV anime adaptation. The studio that will be working on this is Pine Jam. And the synopsis is, first-year high school student Junta Shiraishi is a mob character who goes unnoticed even when he's standing right next to you. But his classmate, heroine-level beauty Kubo, always notices him and is there to tease him. Anyone can become special to somebody, but it might be a little too early to call these feelings love. Perhaps this story is still two steps behind romantic comedy. Let's call it a sweet comedy where a background character becomes visible. So, I don't know, that I'm very curious by that synopsis, because it almost implies that it's not like, you know, Teasing Master Takagi-san or something like that, where the girl's teasing him because she likes him. I wonder if there might be something actually else there. It could just turn into be a teasing girl show, and I'm totally fine with that. But it kind of implies something else, unless they're just trying to imply something just to make it more mysterious. But
it just seems like a rom-com to me. I really like
this. The synopsis literally just said it's not a rom-com yet.
Oh, okay.
Don't call it a rom-com.
It's not a rom-com. It's totally about. And completely, it might definitely probably not be a teasing master Takagi-san. So I love it.
The rise of the teasing girls genre. I'm liking it. I need to make my video on that. I keep talking about making a video on the rise of the teasing girl genre. I like it. I want more of it. Speaking of teasing girl genre, sort of. the official website for Shikimari Is Not Just a Cutie has announced more delays for the series. I kind of reported on this on a video a while back. Some of it's no longer relevant, but there is still one relevancy, and that's that we've seen, like, what, 3 or 4 delays on Shikimori's episodes, and we're going to see another one, which is going to be the May 28th episode, which is episode 9, will be delayed until June 18th, so... Oof, sorry to all the Shikimori is not just a cutie fans. I think most of the discussion around Shikimori is not just a cutie completely died after, like, the second episode, so I'm not sure exactly how many people are still, like, super invested in that series, but, yeah. That, of course, for those that are not aware, this is mainly due to the fact that they had, like, almost 2 weeks total that Dogokobo was not working at their facility due to a little bit of an outbreak of the pandemic in their particular studios, so... This is probably them trying to not just completely cut out episodes, but maybe just kind of stagger the delays, and so you don't see too much of an impact. So, but it does look like they're continuing on all the way until July 9th with the 12th episode finale. So it, I guess giving them credit for the fact that they did not end up delaying this completely an entire season, because that was my failed prediction. I guess you got me, Dogokobo. You proved me wrong. I'm all for that. But, yeah, even with, like, 3 or 4 weeks of delays, they somehow managing to actually complete this season, so good on them. But hopefully the staff is safe and they are staying healthy, and anybody that was inflicted by it are recovering quickly, as always. So there you go. And our last bit of news. Exciting, Chris. Neither of us want to talk about this. But yes, apparently a group of employees at Seven Seas Entertainment have apparently formed a union. So they call it the Union United Workers of Seven Seas. So they have formed this union in response to, even though Seven Seas has seen substantial growth due to the pandemic, a lot of growth in their production. They are producing a lot more titles. They are seeing a huge boom in sales. But they feel that despite that, they are shouldering the pain. They find themselves overworked, underpaid, and do not currently receive benefits otherwise typical of the publishing industry. So, yeah, they have formed this union in response to that, and they are put their goals forward, which include healthcare, paid leave and pensions benefits, paid time off, vacation, holiday breaks, increased wages and transparent increased structure, reasonable workloads, no more crunch, secure employment status for all, protections and benefits for freelancers, clear defined jobs and roles and organizational chart, training materials and onboarding, a robust scheduling and admin department, management training for all managers and supervisors, an end to exclusivity and anti-freelance contracts, anti-harassment discrimination policies and processes for submitting grievances. That's technically legally required, but sure. Bonuses and vendor gifts, reimbursements for costs, inter-department communication, and increased staff for overburdened departments. It's not much. It's not much. So what do you think, Chris? I talked about this a bit. I kind of stayed pretty neutral on this so far. I know there's a lot of people that are jumping in to get their titles out there. Seven Seas exposed. Bad work conditions and stuff like that. Which, if it ends up being true, I'm all against all that kind of stuff. I really do think that if employees are being treated poorly, if they have bad work conditions and there's crunch, yes, all that stuff is rough. Again, I've argued before, crunch exists in every single work environment in the entire world, but I've gone through crunch. I don't like it, but sometimes it's required. But that aside, I think the more I look at this, the more I don't want to state things outright quite yet, but there's a lot of signs that are really giving me a lot of pause on this, and I don't like the fact that people are jumping on this as being a positive quite yet, just because I don't think the evidence is quite there yet. But, yeah, thoughts.
It's frustrating because we've talked about this in other things. One of the funny things about this is...
there's nothing funny about this, Chris.
Yes, there is. we got into a kind of an off-kilter discussion about just recently with the whole Anya thing. Andrew had
non-traversies?
Yeah, non-traversies. It's and not saying that, and this is just like Andrew had, I'm already getting frustrated in the fact that I have to say this because it's a really annoying.
Preface everything
exactly.
You can't talk bad about unions. It's always positive.
This is the frustrating thing because by me saying anything, automatically I'm on one side or the other, and this is exactly why I'm talking about this. I am so frustrated in the fact that I feel like I have to preface the entire thing with this. Just because I say this does not mean it's dumb because of the fact that you have to be on one side or the other. We should not be in this narrative state where literally you have to, just like the Anya thing, if I say when I made the joke at Andrew, oh, Andrew, we have to be mad about this. Well, automatically that means Chris doesn't or is for this or Chris is against this. No, I just like Andrew was saying in his video, and I agree with him 99.99%. I don't think that there is that. I think that it's just a show where they're talking about a girl who's really, really happy that her dad is so cool. Waku waku. I mean, that's the whole
outrage
point.
One way or the other.
Yeah. Why do you have to be mad on one side or the other? Why do we have to be mad about the fact that your is has Rule 34 all over the place? Or you have to justify Rule 34. There's things that should be kind of off limits, but at the same time, I'm not going to be mad because people do it. People are going to do stupid stuff. I don't get why we have to be on one side or the other. Why can't there be a point where, and that's why we've tried to stay the way we are, trying to be neutral about this stuff.
So the union, Chris.
The union thing. I've always been very kind of, for lack of a better term, anti-union, because I don't think that they're very helpful to businesses in general. I do like collective bargaining. I think that collective bargaining is important.
Union in concept is good. It's exactly. Just when it's used improperly, I think, is my key thing there.
It tends to be a matter of over-forcing.
Overstretching.
Overstretching. They push too hard on one side or the other, and they tend to ruin the very business that they are trying to do. And here's the thing. If you are already getting mad at me, because I know there's somebody who's mad at me, because they think that unions are the perfectest thing ever, and that's fine. Okay. I want you to think about something. Let's say your union randomly decides that they want to get more, and your business, the business that you are trying to support, you have a guaranteed job because of your union to that business. Your guaranteed job, they push that business too far, and they say, okay, I'm done, and they walk away.
And that was my point that I really made, is I've seen too many times where unions close businesses. Because they ask for too much, they go to a point where the company says, we can't support this financially, and they shut down. I've seen it. I've seen huge plants shut down around here. Because the union required this, they couldn't support it. So they're like, it's either we go in debt to go into those requirements, or because in those cases, those unions were exploiting the employees to pull more out of the company. And it's just not, they couldn't stand it. And that was my whole point with this whole situation. And again, I'm coming from a standpoint where we don't have enough information. We have this group of people that were employed by Seven Seas, created a union. This is, mind you, not, this doesn't mean all of the employees support this. This means that I think it's like 30%, maybe less, in order to form one. But it's one of those things where, because a group has said this, does not mean this is all happening. We have, I've looked everywhere online. I couldn't find anything. No statements. No proof. Nothing says how much Seven Seas is making, and we are mad about this. A group said this, and the group was formed. I don't see evidence yet of what's actually happening. That's why I'm keeping neutral on it. And I think, and it bothers me that people aren't the same. They immediately see union and say, this is great. I cannot believe this is happening to that Seven Seas is doing this to these people. But where's the statements? Where's the stories? I don't see anything yet. I can't find anything. And so I'm supposed to just take this word for it. Like I said before, I have some speculations out there of what created this. And if it's the case, I am going to blow it open. I'm not going to even... This is the whole thing that we're talking about earlier, this idea of trying to keep neutral with a lot of this stuff. But what's going to happen is in probably a month, what's going to happen is either Seven Seas will say, okay, sorry, we're going to do this, and then we'll go with that. Or Seven Seas is going to come back and say, no, that's not what's happening. We're not doing any of that stuff. And then they're going to ask for a boycott. And guess what? That's the point in which we can no longer be quiet. And so I know it's already come, and I know it's coming down the road. So I might as well start to talk about people, to our listeners and stuff, about why the setup is happening right now. Why we're setting this up is because I know in about a month, we're going to have to take a side. Because again, nobody wants anybody to not pick a side to the extremes. Not to say that we're going to be extreme on one side or the other. It's just the more the idea that we're going to probably give our opinions at that point when more information comes out. A single website, a Squarespace.com website, you couldn't even get a domain, saying all these terrible things Seven Seas is doing doesn't prove that. And I'm sorry, I live in a world of proof. I need a proof that something is happening before I'm going to say, everybody, Seven Seas is terrible. Now, I think in waiting for that stuff to come out, my initial thoughts right now is that, one, I've had nothing but terrible experience with unions. I think they've done nothing but destroy companies. I used to work for a company where these union people were coming in and they were literally talking to people on the side about all these things they want to do. I heard about how they were essentially trying to push the company to pay the union itself a bunch of money. And then people started getting fired by the company because they couldn't support and don't want people talking to them. I've seen companies shut down because of unions and their expectations from the company itself. All these things make it very difficult for me to trust. Again, I think the idea of a union is great. I think the idea of injustice being corrected by the collective of the employees is great. And again, if any of this stuff is true, I hope that they find the parts that I think are unjust get corrected. The problem that I see so far right now, my initial impressions on this union is that I think there's a lot of areas where, again, it's positive. But there's a lot of areas, because I don't think that crunch should be acceptable. I think if people don't want the crunch, they can voice their concerns. But there's areas where it overreaches that gives me pause. When you talk about every year they must have a bonus, I don't like that. I don't like the idea of the employees dictating that every year we should get a bonus. That's the overreach. That's the pulling money out of the pocket of the company and essentially killing the company. We should be able to give gifts to retailers. That's illegal. Why would you put that on the website? That is technically illegal for you to give companies gifts. I'm not a lawyer, but I've worked with plenty of companies where they say literally, if you do that, you will be fired because that opens a door to legal issues. Do not give gifts to retailers. Do not give it to the companies you're buying from. Do not give gifts from one company to another. It's just a very bad area to be in. There's some other stuff in there that I don't really want to get into too much, but a lot of it's really just they feel like the company itself is inadequate in its management to support how much they're pushing out. I kind of agree with that. I think those are good grievances to have with the company. Again, the anti-harassment and discrimination stuff. Again, that's a legal matter. If they're not protecting people from harassment or discrimination, go to the authorities for that stuff. That doesn't require a union to fix. So again, there's a lot of emphasis on freelance and that kind of stuff that really gives me a big question mark. There's a lot of stuff for protecting employees from having to translate things that are uncomfortable for them. Just say you don't want to do it and they'll find somebody else to do it. That stuff doesn't, and there's a lot of question marks that are coming up right now that is, okay, here is a big preface here. These are the speculations that people have. These are not confirmed true. But because there's a lot of emphasis on things about translations, freelances, and stuff, there's a lot of speculation that a good portion, the group that actually created this union, is the translators. And there's a lot of focus in these requests, quote-unquote, demands, about translating. So it makes me believe that the translators might be the ones that form the union. Again, this is speculation. And there's been a lot of talk about Seven Seas and how they've been censoring things, and that the translators might be at fault. And this might be their attempt to try to force the company to either allow them to censor things or to not translate stuff that has inappropriate content in it. And so that's the area where I'm saying, when I think about that stuff, it makes sense. Again, it's speculation, and I'm holding my tongue in claiming that that is 100% true and making a video and making my claim, but that stuff gives me a lot of pause. And I hope that gives other people pauses, because I think the big concern that I have right now is not so much that I believe the union's bad or I believe Seven Seas is bad. It's more of, why are people jumping on the bandwagon that this is a good thing just by seeing the title of the videos that people are releasing? You guys have zero clue what's happening in there. You have zero clue what the union is. The union's not saying anything that specific cases, and Seven Seas hasn't said anything. So why are we jumping on a bandwagon that this is good or bad? This could be one way or the other. And I think this idea that because Seven Seas has seen huge growth since the pandemic started is a bad thing to consider. I worked through the pandemic as a procurement manager. We didn't see growth in sales. We've seen growth in costs. Because this idea that everybody's at home and they're reading books and they're buying more books and that Seven Seas is make more money, that's fantastic. But how much does Seven Seas pocket there? How much money they're making? We don't know. Could they be seeing more profits? Sure. Could they see growth? Sure. But how much money are they profiting? Paper alone has seen god-awful amounts of cost increases. When I was doing procurement, anything that had paper in it skyrocketed. We're talking 20 to 40% or more in cost increase. I mean, our mother had cabinets put in. It was so delayed because they were hoping the cost of wood would come back down. The pandemic brought more than just increased sales of Seven Seas. It also increased the costs. So to say that because they've seen growth means that they are making more money is not true. Now, I don't know if they made deals with companies to have set costs for paper. Most of those deals, when I was working procurement, were broken. Those companies broke those deals because they couldn't support it. Or they did some shady stuff to get you to go somewhere else, like delaying orders and stuff like that. So anyways, rant off. That's my whole thoughts on this situation. And like I said, I want to wait for more information, and I'm a little disappointed that a lot of people are just jumping on this being true. Now, if you have, I don't know, cited articles explaining in detail with proof of what Seven Seas did, please bring it to my attention. I would love to hear about it. If I'm defending, I'm not really defending Seven Seas. Let me be perfectly clear. If they're doing this stuff, if they're treating their employees poorly, if they're forcing people to translate things, like forcing, I'm not talking about, well, they said that they had to translate this and oh my gosh, they had to translate it. Like forced, like you're going to get fired unless you translate this thing that makes you uncomfortable, which again, I technically think that they should, because your job is to translate. If you find stuff uncomfortable, then stop translating for a company that has questionable content in it. That would be like a person that does photography being upset because he started working at a adult place and he had to take pictures of adult stuff. You can't just suddenly say, okay, we got to stop taking pictures of inappropriate stuff because this guy doesn't like taking pictures of inappropriate stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't know. We'll see, but for now, woof.
In closing thoughts.
In closing,
because it seems like you're bringing it to a close. So let me get my last thoughts out. When it comes down to it, unions and the business are in this kind of a bluff situation where they're both bluffing. The union wants to prove that they have enough backing to force the company to bend to their will. Either you do this stuff or we will strike until you lose your business.
Yeah, they're saying they don't want to boycott yet.
Right. And the businesses in this situation of they have to kind of bluff of how and I want you to understand what I'm saying here, because they're going to tell, look, we can't give you any more, otherwise we don't make money. And in some cases they're bluffing because they have to make a profit, because and what a lot of people don't realize, just like what Andrew was talking about with the costs and stuff like that. So they will talk about the costs. But they've also, when they make profit, it's not always that they're making profit. They're setting future goals. Mm-hmm. So they have to take into consideration, okay, I've made this much money.
Profit in sometimes is investment.
Yeah, investment. And
that's so, how companies grow, is they invest what they've made.
So when you think about, okay, yeah, this company made this much money, that's not always true. They might hire a new person. Okay, so that person has to be hired in at the same cost as all these other people. Not necessarily that they're going to, in the future, be making that much money. They it shows on paper that they made this much money, but that's not always true. Plus, you have dividends that have to be paid out if it's a big enough company, which I seriously doubt. Seven Seas doesn't seem like it's in that category yet, but somebody's making a profit off of that. They put the financial money out there originally to get this started. So doesn't that person deserve some money? I mean, it's frustrating because, I mean, if you were to start a business, you would expect to make money off of that business. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, they think that the people who start businesses are endless money bags. Usually the person who started the business is the one who gets paid last. Nobody ever considers that. They are the one who, many times, a business owner will not pay themselves just so the company can survive, because they're hoping that one day down in the future, that business will be a payoff at some point, and they will strive. They're the ones who end up staying overnight, and people don't realize that. I'm not saying that at some point, like, Netflix is big enough that those people are doing that. Not necessarily Seven Seas. I'm not real sure exactly where they are in the realm of how much money that they're making, but take that into consideration. Not always is everything black and white. We're talking about sticking up for the people who are translating. I applaud you for that. But also, don't forget that there's another side to this story that, yeah, there's the bluffing involved, but at the same time, there's the truth of the matter, which some of these people I seriously doubt this company has really been that bad. And if they were, like Andrew said, I want them to be get their hands slapped, for lack of a better term.
It's good to note that, according to the words of the union itself, members of Seven Seas Union have not experienced any issue with harassment or discrimination to date. We strive to keep it that way. So that's an admission, at least there, that they're not being harassed or discriminated against. Although in that same little snippet, they say they should never be required to work on materials that make them uncomfortable. So obviously they're not being harassed or discriminated there. So that's not an issue. But sorry, just want to make that clear, that if you are thinking that this whole union thing is about people being treated poorly and harassed and discriminated against, even though that's a big tagline that makes you believe that is an issue, apparently it's not an issue. There's been no harassment or discrimination to date for at least the union workers. Again, it could be that they've seen it and the people that are not a part of the union yet are not speaking up. So I will admit that. But anywho, we'll see how this turns out. But like I said, we'll remain neutral. It could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. I hope it's not a bad thing. I would love to see this company continue. I would love to see that these people are happy with their jobs. Obviously, it seems like a a portion of the employees are not happy with their jobs. And that, I guess that's the big key thing there, is that there's a little bit of a fear about, since this is obviously not the entirety of all the employees, it seems like there's plenty of people that do enjoy their job still, because they're not a part of the union. And so there is a fear there that, despite the fact that they do give that statement that they seem like they do love Seven Seas and they want Seven Seas to be successful, how much of that is really them looking out for the best of the company? But we'll have to see as it goes along. I hope. I'm a little bit mad that one of these demands, or I'm sorry, goals, is not that they reprint Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation. But technically that was one that got censored and then had to be uncensored by the translators. So maybe that's a part of the problem, not necessarily the good thing. That's one of those things of, like, be careful what you wish for. I mean, yes, there's a future that everybody's happy, the company is successful, the demands were met, they make lots of money, everybody makes lots of money, and we get everything we want. Or there could be the other side of it, that either Seven Seas closes, we no longer get any, the rest of the Mushoku Tensei printed, for example, as an example. Or everything going forward has to be censored because they need to meet the expectations of the translators that demanded that they no longer translate what makes them uncomfortable. Even though technically translating to censor is you still dealing with something that's uncomfortable, which makes no sense to me, but...
Well, it's frustrating because at this point, this being started, whether you choose one side or the other, this happening is not... How do I put this? Because my words are going to get twisted here, I know it. This happening was not good, because what happened just now with this starting, this is a you will bend to our will or we will crush you. And the problem is that there is no, if Seven Seas bends to the will and they do actually give in to these demands, and like Andrew said, if this is actually true and all these things were what needed to happen, and according to these employees, this stuff needed to happen. If they bend to the will and they give all this, and Seven Seas was actually making all this money, I guess maybe that's a good thing. But let's say for just thought process sakes only, just a thought experiment, let's say that they are not actually making all this insane amounts of money. And they can't. All these translators say, well, okay, then we go the other way. Even if new translators get hired in, they have to go through training, blah, 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 blah. There's going to be a loss of money. No matter how you look at it, Seven Seas will, if they are not making all the money that they're implying, they can go under. Just like we said earlier, this is not, to me...
You'll probably see an increase in cost in the books, and they won't sell, and then they'll go under.
Exactly. I hate to say this, there's no good end to that comes out of this. There's none. None whatsoever.
That's always been the difficult thing to talk about things like this, is because it's just like animation in Japan. Yeah, I would love for all of them to get paid six figures a year.
Yeah.
I want every translator to get six figures a year. I want the guys that are printing the books, printing on the assembly line, every one of them to get six figures a year. But guess what that means?
I want all the voice actors to get paid six figures a year.
But guess
I
what that... But the thing is that as much as people hope that means that it's just that the company makes less money and everything comes out even, it's not. The reality is that your book, your volume 6 of the next light novel that you're buying is $50.
Yeah,
I mean,
and they're already god awful expensive as it is.
The thing, and that's the weird thing in their demands, is they're saying that they want industry standard pay, and it's like, but they're not industry standard books. You're not looking at a book of, I don't know, Game of Thrones. That, I mean, we're not talking about books that cost. We're talking about
well, $10 and, night novels.
Exactly.
And $10 mangas. They're not industry standard sold items.
And
they're not industry standard sold amounts.
And to top off on what you're saying, the also take into consideration that you're buying multiple volumes of the same story. So eventually, when it comes down to it, how many books is Mushoku Tensei? How many volumes is that? 12?
They've released, or, I think, 16 here recently, and it's going to go up to 23, I think.
Okay, and if each one of those, that's 160 if you buy the entire thing right now. Now, imagine if you had to pay $50 of volume. That's a god-awful amount. I mean, you're talking, what, $800?
Yeah.
Be careful what you're asking for, guys.
And people might be fine with that. If you're fine with that in order to get the six
I'm not.
Figures, no, I'm saying that people might be out for that. But it's not... It sounds mean, but it's not the world I'm looking for. Because, again, and it's not the world that a lot of people are looking for. And what that's going to turn into is no sales. And that's the unfortunate thing. And that's just the reality that we live in. And that's that kind of rough reality that a lot of people don't really want to accept. That's, again, like the voice actors thing for the dubs. They demand more pay and everything. I'd love them to have six-figure salaries. I mean, that's the pie in the sky. Everybody gets six-figure salaries. And that might work out for them. But it's not going to work out for your sub. Your sub's going to go up. I mean, something's got to cover that cost. And that means, yeah, maybe we'll get Netflix sub costs for Crunchyroll going forward. I don't know. It's a struggle. That's the whole thing about difficulty of talking about it. Because it sounds like you're being the bad guy when you say you can't do that. Like, the company can't sustain that. Because there's a lot of people out there that just figure it just comes out of the air.
And just remember, this is what the narrative thing, when I got off on my random, I hate that we get stuck in this narrative thing. This is what people are asking you to support. What you are supporting is effectively you're backing these translators, which that's fine. I understand why you want to back these translators because you believe that they should be valued more. I understand that. But understand, when you do that, just like the voice actors, and when people get mad at me because I think that they're gatekeeping because they are whipping people into a frenzy, just like this, they're whipping people into a frenzy so that they go and attack the company, whether you agree with the company or not. They're whipping you into a frenzy so that you attack the company. They win because the company bends to their will. That eventually will end up in whether you agree with what they're doing or not. The voice actors or the translators, the localizers, all these people who are the ones that are talking to you because you think they're a cool guy. You don't know what they're asking these companies behind the closed doors. You don't know what they're saying. Just like we were trying to imply earlier, we don't know what the real story is, where this all came from. Instead, what we see is people have whipped us, quote unquote, normies, if you want to call us that, us people who are on the outside. They're whipping us into a frenzy where one person is saying, I don't know, this doesn't seem right. I kind of want Seven Seas to survive this, and I'm not real sure if I really agree with what these people are saying. Oh no, well, you just don't like translators, and you don't like the people who are, so you're automatically an evil person, therefore you need to be trashed. No, not necessarily. I think that these people should be supported. But at the same time, I also know from a business standpoint that this is kind of a bad idea. Unions generally over ask, like Andrew said. That's what it comes down to. That's why I was a little bit leery when I heard about the whole idea with the voice actors wanting to start a union. Why are we starting a union for the voice actors? That's a bad idea. Not necessarily that they don't need a collective bargaining standard. I think collective bargaining is good. But nobody heard any of that because I said I'm not really big on unions. Why? Because unions tend to destroy businesses. Unless there's something like Netflix or something where they're just so freaking massive, it doesn't matter. And even then, I could make the argument that it's still dangerous for a business that big. But when it comes down to it, it's a dangerous situation. Yes, unions have done wonderful things throughout history. I'm sure that somebody's going to bring up the miners or something like that. Yes, unions have done good things through collective bargaining, i.e., I think collective bargaining is a good thing. Unions as a whole are not necessarily a good thing.
It's that aspect. It's like, and again, give me the evidence one way or another, and I'll support one side or the other. For now, my hope is that what they're asking for is what they technically need to do their job and be comfortable. The moment that it overstretches it is where I can kind of, you lose me. And that's really the end statement there. So, all right. Well, that was fun. Eat up all of our time to talk to our community. So, with that said, let us jump into our community. Again, you can go to talkspear.com. There's a contact us button there where you can submit your questions to us. Or you can go to our... There's a link there at talkspear.com to join our Discord. Talk to some great people in the anime community that loves anime. Just want to talk about it. But yes, Otaku Trucker sent in a question. It says, hello, guys. We just talked about Otaku Trucker. Happy to get an answer to my last questions I sent you in the mail episode. I had figured it wouldn't have been a broadcast due to the thousands of emails you guys must get. It really made my day, so thanks for that. I appreciate the question. New question for you. Rate my top five anime of all time. Top five most insufferable characters. So I'm guessing the insufferable characters is the second part. So my top five of all time. Five, he has my girlfriend is a gal, I'm guessing. Unless that's some kind of doujinshi or something I'm not aware of. But my girlfriend is a gal is your number five.
I seem to remember liking that one. It was a little bit iffy on the,
I dropped off it because it was one of those ones where we only got the censored version. The censored version was terrible. So I'm guessing maybe the uncensored version's better. Yes, the not version that came from Funimation because they decided to move My Girlfriend is a Gal to Crunchyroll with the censored version. Thank you. Yeah, it was one of those ones that had like the stupid big huge emblems over naughty stuff. Ugh, it was bad.
I liked it. So, yeah, you're good so far.
It's a fun concept, though. Very, very fun concept. 4F, A Tale of Memories. Oh, man. Oh,
that's my list of shame because it's got my favorite voice actor, one of my favorite voice actresses.
I've had it for a while. I just haven't gotten around to it. It's one of those ones I buy the Blu-ray thinking it'll force me to watch it, but I've heard a lot of good things about it, so I'm certain that's a good one there. Escaflowne movie and series. That's a classic. That goes way up there in the eights and nines. There's parts of it that doesn't really hold up. Because we just recently got that Blu-ray release of it, and me and Chris watched it. But there's parts of it that the pacing and stuff doesn't hold up, but it's a classic. Like, a lot of things that we get for Isekai and stuff like that, and shoujo, action-y type shows, it has all that stuff in it. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the last anime that we got when Japan was pumping way too much money into animation and budgeting. So it's visually insanely good. So that's definitely up there. No comment from Chris.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to think of Tenchi. I don't think
you already jumped on the two. Spoiler.
I absolutely loved Escaflowne. It was goofy, fun, hijinks. Way back in the what?
What is Escaflowne? Goofy hijinks. It's about a girl that gets traveled to a world full of war and destruction between two nations and some bandit guy. Where's Goofy Shenanigans? You're thinking Tenchi Muyo. We haven't even got to Tenchi Muyo.
No, they had the weird war between the two.
The weird Goofy Shenanigan war.
I don't know. I guess I'm thinking of something else. I'm not thinking of Tenchi. I know I'm not.
You're thinking of dual parallel worlds. That's what you're thinking of. The one where he can see Sekai to the other world and has to wear the plug suit that makes him look like a girl so that he can pilot the girl-only mechas.
What the heck are you talking about?
I'm trying to think of something that would be goofy shenanigans and tip and close to Escaflowne.
I don't know. I guess I'm thinking of something else. I thought if Escaflowne was the other, it was another show. So I guess I'm
apparently which show are you thinking about?
Obviously, you can't figure it out because I was getting ready to say it, and you're getting stuck on the fact that I'm the one where the guy and the girl and the they got sucked through the portal and went to the other world and. At some point, they went to a one place. They were going from place to place to figure out how to get back. And one place, they were doing the little goofy war where they...
Oh, you're thinking about... it's up there. El Hazard?
El Hazard, okay.
Yeah. Anyways, Tenchi Muyo, War of Jiminar. I've never watched that one. That was beyond my Tenchi Muyo fandom. And I think I looked at it and I was like, this isn't my Tenchi Muyo. Where's Ryoko and stuff? That guy looks like Tenchi, but eventually I'll watch it.
I've started it a couple of times. It's one of those that are in this kind of weird black hole of time frame in which we weren't heavily following anime. So I never actually got into it, and going back to it has never been a good time, really what it comes down to. But I love Tenchi so much, I've always wanted to go back to it.
Closer, that's your top two, though. And number one, Overlord. That one's an easy one. I'm mixed on the direction that it's going with the end of the last season, but excited to see where it's going to go with the next season coming up. But yeah, that's one that's always been really fascinating to me because it had that whole concept. I think the big thing that great characters, especially like all of his minions, and it's got a very nice dark twinge to it. But I think I've always liked that aspect of the becoming. Your character becoming your avatar, like him losing his own senses of humanity as he's, you know, living in this other world. So really cool, though. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Besides the goblin armies, CGI, woof.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, generally, yeah, I don't blame you for having that top of the list. It's a really good show.
Most insufferable characters. This is going to cause some controversy on the comments and stuff. Number five, Aqua of Konosuba.
Come on. Just think. Purify.
Yeah, that was like the selling point for me. Yeah, she's technically, to give you credit, yes, she is obnoxious. She is super loud, and she always has to be super loud. She definitely does play the part of being the dysfunctional, useless goddess, which I do really like. This idea of being trapped with this lady that was so uppity before, and now she's just being an idiot. But that's kind of why I love her. I get why you feel that she's insufferable, but she technically worked for me, so I did enjoy her. There was times where I was like, okay, enough Aqua, let's go back to, you know, all the other good characters like Mega Man and stuff, but I follow you there. Prince Barburo of Gate. I'm guessing that was the guy that was the prince of the king that captured the Japanese girl and stuff and did horrible things to his subordinate who protected him still, and I hated that. Yeah, he's garbage. Like, there's nothing redeemable about him. There's just every scene that he's in, he's trash. So, yeah, 100% agreed on that one. I hate that he's got that girl under his finger.
I'm generally thinking that I know which one you're talking about, and I agree. I didn't like him at all.
I love seeing there was a scene that I liked about him. It was a scene when he got the crap beat out of him in the middle of the throne room.
That's the character I was thinking of.
I'm guessing. I mean, unless there's another prince that I'm not aware of, I'm pretty sure that's him. But yeah, I was. Coming, just walking into the throne room carrying a Japanese civilian is like, yeah, did you really think that was going to go well? And again, that was the reason why I liked that scene so much, was it was like, everybody watching that scene had the same thought, beat the crap out of this dude. And they do. And it's like, yay, thanks for a show that actually, why is this not finding this?
Probably because Gate's so stupidly generic as a name, and I don't have the entire name. The Japanese Self-Defense Force goes into another world to save people. Well, at least it shows, like, the other girl, like, way up on the list, so that was easy. But I don't see him in the list. I'm not finding this dude at all.
Why don't you just put in search in the...
Yes. No, that's not Barbados. That's Caesar Zorzal is the guy that we're talking about. Who the hell is Prince Barbaro? We've been ranting on about somebody that's not even you're talking about. I don't even see Barbaro when I search that. Who are you talking about, Otaku Trucker? Barbaro. There's no characters by name Barbaro. Did it translate it differently somewhere else, maybe? Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I'm going to assume that you're probably talking about him, though. I don't know of a Barbaro. Somebody can correct us. So, Gate, Japanese Self-Defense Force, Barbaro. That's not Prince. That's Barbaro. I guess it could be, but maybe he's not a character that has... Anyways, moving on. I'm going to assume that's the guy that we're talking about, that Caesar guy. But number three, he's got Riser Phoenix of High School DxD. Was that the creepy dude that ran off with everybody on the bus? No, that's High School DxD. I'm thinking of High School of the Dead. Riser Phoenix DxD. I don't even remember him. Maybe I blocked him from my mind. Do you remember Riser Phoenix?
Mm-mm.
Was he the one that they did the battle with?
Probably at the end of the...
Yeah, he was going to force the marriage with that battle that they did.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I can see that. Not my favorite character at all.
He wasn't that bad.
He wasn't that bad.
not bad. Compared to the next one.
Let's see. Yuno of
Yuno didn't bother me. It was I take that back. Yuno didn't bother me. It was her partner. I can't stand that guy. He bugged the crap out of me, but I put up with the show just for him or just for her.
I've never been a fan of Yuno. I mean, I understand the whole Yandere thing, but I don't know. I think the only thing that really redeemed her is really the end of it.
Yuki is his name. I couldn't stand Yuki. I forgot his.
I think there's this kind of mixture when it comes to Yandere's. I think that a lot of people either like Yandere characters, like specific Yandere character. I'm not talking about as a whole, because I think there's a lot of Yandere characters that I like, and there's a lot that I don't like. I think it kind of comes down to if you can kind of, yeah, a lot of people just love the idea of somebody being deathly in love with them, and so that is kind of the appeal for a lot of people. But there's also the aspect of, yeah, maybe getting to their story, understanding why they're kind of so drawn to somebody can sometimes be the enjoyment. And yeah, there's the aspect of, yeah, seeing some chick beat the crap or possibly kill somebody that is in the way of their loved one. So
I do think that a lot of it comes down to the femme fatale. I really do. I generally like the full devotion of the Yandere, and that's always been kind of my favorite thing about them. I've never been big on the psycho side per se, but when it comes down to it, it's kind of a package deal. Either you like, you go with that or you don't. So it's generally always been kind of and I like Yuno mostly because of her, because of the fact that technically she's trying to play this this kind of chess match aspect. That's kind of spoilerish, so bear with it. But when it comes down to it, it is a very she does have these really fantastic scenes that I really love.
Yeah. And last one, number one, his most insufferable character is Subaru from ReZero.
I think that was a troll at you, honestly.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that don't like Subaru. I'm a Subaru apologist. It's not to say that I think that he's, like, great or anything. I think that a lot of people's issues with Subaru is why I think he's a fascinating character. I think a lot of people dropped off of ReZero because of how, especially during the Mansion arc, which was like the first point we really seen Subaru being pushed through a grinder. People thought that he got annoying there, and I felt like he made sense. Just like being an apologist for Shinji of Evangelion is this idea of, yeah, he's whiny, he doesn't want to get in the mecha. Well, yeah, because if the mecha gets its arm ripped off, he feels like his arm literally got ripped off. Like, in his mind is telling him, your arm's gone, and you just felt it dislocatious, this remove itself from the socket and the skin tear. It's kind of understandable that he's a little messed up. And I had that feeling with Subaru when he was getting really thrown to the grinder and killed and suspecting friends and having friends turn on him the next time he resets. I understand people's perspective of not liking him as the otaku self and dancing and doing the, I don't know, the John Travolta pose and stuff. I don't really care for that side. I think he's eccentric and fun in a way. And that's his character. That's him as a person. I understand people's grievances with that side of him. I don't follow people on the grievances of him as a character when he's put through the grinder. So
I've always been kind of middle of the road. I don't hate Subaru, but at the same time, he's not my favorite character in all realms. I feel about about with him like I do with Shinji or some of the other characters. Like I said, Yuki, I really don't like. There's a character in Akinohana that's the same way. He's bordering on that edge of, if it wasn't for the fact that I would, and for those who don't know, Akinohana is one of my favorite stories of all time. I think it's a fantastic story. But when it comes down to it, the main character in that one is very similar in respects of, I wish that they weren't as, to me, they just get a little bit overboard. And it's kind of like with when Andrew brings up the whole melancholy.
Timid and self-deprecating and lack of any sense of confidence.
Yeah. It's one of those frustrating things that I deal with it in a lot of cases. I don't hold any animus especially when it's a character that, technically, like Andrew said, I can make the argument for this and this. And when you stop and you think about it, yeah, especially since I'm more character driven, I understand the aspect of what Andrew's talking about. If I was to sit there and die over and over and over and over again, I'd be a little bit paranoid when it comes to people who I should be technically trusting. When it comes down to it, characters that you really like doing these kinds of things, you would be a little bit leery of them as well. Or you'd be a little bit whiny when it comes to, like Andrew was saying, your arm is ripping off, you would hurt. Yeah, it would kind of suck.
Well, I got a kick out of that with the Subaru things. There was at the time, and again, I'm not sure if Otaku Trucker is his grievances with Subaru is his goofiness or if it's his breaking. Either way, I mean, I understand how people get frustrated with it. Just like I said, my mentality is going in the direction of when I hear people say, I really hate Subaru in this episode because he's all whiny. And it's like, well, have you ever had like a morning star the size of a watermelon, a ball with spikes on it, crush your skull in? I don't know if I would I can't say that I believe his reaction to that is good, believable or not, because I've never had my face smashed in by a morning star the size of a watermelon. It's hard to understand what somebody would feel having died and then reset
and still reset. Talk to that person again ever.
I mean the first time I died, I'd be running. Like, I probably would have ditched the mansion. Like, maybe my only way of really thinking that Subaru is an unbelievable character is I feel like I would have left a long time ago. Like, I don't think most people would have stayed in that mansion.
Well, when it comes down to it, I personally don't like Subaru because he didn't choose right.
That is true. Episode 18. Yeah, that was funny because I was defending Subaru, and then 18 happened, and I'm like, yeah, Subaru's a bad character. His writing doesn't make any sense. Anyways, that's all the time we have for now. I think we spoke way too long on unions. That's fine. Hopefully people enjoy the conversation. But as always, we definitely appreciate you guys' support. And if you guys do want to support us, again, talkiespread.com, that's where you can find all of our links to everywhere. You can find our Twitch channel there. Support us at twitch.tv/otakuspirited, ED at the end there. If you have a Amazon Prime account and you don't Twitch Prime anybody, just go over there and drop it on us. We'd definitely appreciate it. Additionally, you can, you know, subscribe to our channel. We just hit 6,000 subs, so I'm definitely appreciative of you guys supporting us and sharing out our YouTube channel as well and viewing our videos there. Again, if you're a fan of Mushoku Tensei, just finished up Volume 1, putting up the last part of that up onto the channel, so that's been a lot of fun. Additionally, we have a tips link on otakuspirited.com. We have other ways you guys can support us, including Patreon. We definitely appreciate all of our Patreon supporters. We've got some new ones, and we definitely appreciate... Thank you all for listening. Hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Os!
Caught up on everything last week.
Caught up. I'm up to date on Tomodachi. I can't stand that show. I really can't.
It's so bad.
I don't know why. Like, I don't know what it is about that show that I hate.
It's so hilarious because it's like, did you know that he's murdered somebody before? And everybody's like, oh, you're a murderer? I was friends with the murderer. Well, I'm going to go by myself, so peace out, guys. You're going to leave us behind? It's like, what? What is this? Is this like split personality or just kind of like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I love syndrome? This guy. What the hell?
I can't. The melodrama, I can't.
I don't know what it is about that show I hate, and yet I love it at the same time. It's just such...
Yeah, I can't.